This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's start off with the scary story first. I don't know why it is in bull riding. If you go 8 seconds, you're great. But when I go 8 seconds, I'm a two pump chump. You know, it doesn't seem fair, Rob. This story.
Yeah. It doesn't seem fair to who?
Me.
The recipient?
Both of us. No, a bull rider, 24, was gored in the throat.
Ooh.
Lucky to be alive after losing 2 gallons of blood in a shocking video. Scary situation for Zachary Nagel, 24, competing in the Conley Invitational in Palmetto, Florida last week. He was stabbed in the neck just seconds into his massive angry bull ride. It's got to be one of the most dangerous sports out there. I mean, you're expected to stay on the damn thing for 8 seconds, and that's good.
Yeah.
It tells you how dangerous this damn thing is. They don't want to mess around. These bulls ain't going to play. Got bulls on parade. Oh, sorry. Video shows him bleeding profusely into his clothes and the ground and struggling to breathe. I mean, this is one of those ones where, like, we talked about DeMar Hamlin and that team being there and ready to save his life on the football field.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you had to be prepared, try to get some kind of tourniquet going. That's a lot of blood coming in, and it's got to be so close to his jugular, too. So he said, I could feel myself going in and out from the amount of blood loss in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. Had to fight to keep breathing. 24-year-old said he lost more than 2 gallons of blood from the horn. Horn wound, which severed his small carotid artery, according to the report. Damn, that's a lot, man.
That is a lot. Isn't it amazing how much blood the human body produces?
Yeah.
You lose 2 gallons. Okay, where's the rest of the blood come from?
Do you think he's going to go back to bull riding?
Probably.
Yes. He already said he's going back. Yeah. That's a most certainly a white guy. Hey, man, a shark done bit off your arm. You going to go surfing again? Yes. Dumbass. He'll come back and finish the job. That's something where I would end up giving it up. You know, if I went to a trampoline park and tore my ACL, guess where I'm not going back to?
Trampoline park.
Yeah. If I go in the water and an alligator or something bites my damn arm off, I ain't going back in the water.
You know why you say that?
Why?
Because you have no interest in either one of those.
Yeah.
What about the horrific injuries and the body pains you've had from playing basketball and your ass went right back?
That's okay.
Exactly. Because you love it.
Man, shut up. You don't know. All right.
I bet if he tore his ACL playing basketball, let that bitch heal up, go right back.
I'd be out there shooting jump shots on one leg.
Exactly. His pinky faces the other way now because he's broken it so many
exactly.
times.
Exactly.
By the way, my left-hand pinky, it sticks out way further than my right. I tried to catch a soccer ball with my bare hand because I could palm a basketball. It was showing off, and the damn thing hit me on my pinky, and it went, and it pointed left. Trying to catch it with one hand.
How else are you supposed to catch a soccer ball?
With 2 hands. You're going to catch
it,
palm it?
Bare hand. Okay.
Yeah, one hand. So, anyway, let's get to this because I think this is pretty cool and get your take on it.
On time you start catching balls with your hands.
Missed it. Caught it with my face.
Your face.
These are 10 things in sports that Barstool believes is stupid. You want to go over some of these, see how you feel about them?
Yes.
How about the unwritten rules of baseball?
Uh-huh.
You feel like these are stupid?
Uh-huh.
Minor leaguer using a bunt to break up a no-hitter with one out in the ninth, stealing a base when you're up 6. You remember all the... Then write them down. Why are they unwritten? Just tell us we can't do it.
Because they
don't exist. Yeah, it's just dumb. There's so many of those, too, with the unwritten rules. And when it's something you don't understand, you just call it an unwritten rule. Because no, what do you mean?
Nobody's going to challenge you on it.
No, nobody's going to say it. I do. This is one that I never thought about, but it doesn't make any sense. Why are baseball managers the only ones in full uniform? Like, what if John Harbaugh wore a helmet and pads on the sideline? You know how stupid that would look? Or the coaches on the NBA team is wearing his own jersey. Why is it in baseball that they wear the full uniform? You ain't getting in the game. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Or a volleyball coach.
Yeah. Wearing... He got knee pads on and shorty shorts.
Well, the funny thing about the baseball uniform is they didn't start that way. They used to wear suits and stuff in the dugout. And then, like, who was the first person that started? Like, the player's probably like, coach, why are you wearing that?
Yeah. It is crazy. And I don't know how big of a tennis fan you are. Another stupid thing in sports is tennis players apologizing for good shots. Now, what they mean by this is there's a lot of times where, like, they show a video of Carlos Alcaraz actually hitting a shot that hits the top of the net and then falls in, and then they apologize for it because, yeah, nobody intended to hit the top of the net and have it drop in. So there's this thing where it's like, hey, I'm sorry, I won the point that way. I don't know why they do it. I'd take that damn point. It's like, yeah, I meant to do that. I'll do it again.
Yeah.
So let me know if it happens again because I meant it. But yeah, that's something that another thing that they said is completely stupid. This is one I agree with because, I'm sorry. I like a lot of people in this industry that do this, but there's nothing there. They don't tell you anything. Sideline reporters in football. Tell me the injuries at halftime. If someone is hurt or someone's coming back, but when they go to interview them before the game, it's like, hey, how you feeling? What's the game plan today? Want to go out there and play defense? Like, what? You don't find out anything. They don't tell you anything.
Yeah, you don't.
So, again,
it's wasted motion.
But I think there should be points in time where you're going to update certain things. And, like, you know, we talk about it in baseball or even in basketball. Basketball, you might have a guy that's rolling his ankle. They interview the coach coming out. They're asking him questions about the first half. In football, you get that at halftime, but the rest of it's just kind of silly to me. Like, I think there's just a lot of nonsense in that industry, if you will. This is another one that they pointed. Automatic first downs in football. There are a ton of football penalties. I could point at it and poke holes in it, like rewarding terribly underthrown passes with pass interference because the receiver has to stop on a dime to come back to the football. I get that aspect of it because, yeah, I mean, the quarterback threw a bad pass. It was up to the wide receiver to turn around and run into the guy. And because he turns before the actual defensive back, he ends up getting the pass interference. I understand that, but I do think, you know, some of these are necessary. It's up to you to decide, too, whether or not you like the 15-yard first down that they do in college for pass interference or if you like the spot of the foul. Because if you're beat and you grab somebody, you're just giving up 15 yards. You're not giving up the score.
You're not.
So. How about this? Shooting fouls in basketball. And what they mean by that are the pump fake jump into the guy and throw it up, and then you get your foul. Like, they've tried to eliminate some of that in the league.
Yeah.
But it's impossible because a good pump fake, you're in my space. If I come up, throw my hands up, I'm going to get the call almost every time. Now, they've tried to get rid of the kick your foot out, hit somebody. But now you get a flagrant foul even if somebody jumps into what they deem to be their landing space, right? They land on your foot. You get a flagrant one for that. It's crazy. So you're going to get two shots and the ball back. Let me give you the last ones here. And these are shootouts in hockey and soccer. You like those? I think they're kind of exciting. But I guess people that like those sports want to see the traditional overtime and not something goofy at the end of the game. Like, you wouldn't want to see field goal kickers come in and kick five field goals. Or maybe you would want to see them take five shots from the one to see how many they get in. I don't know. But again, those aren't sports for me.
Do they just mean the act of the shootout or
to decide the game?
Okay. Because I think in the regular season, it's necessary in hockey. But and I'm glad they don't do it in playoffs because, like, when you get to, like, double overtime in NHL playoffs, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't stop watching it.
Real.
Here, real quick, these three. Fans singing Sweet Caroline.
Stupid.
Dabo Sweeney sprinting out of the tunnel. Man, what you running out here for, you dumbass? Just walk on out. What are you sprinting for? And one of the last ones, this is a bonus one. What do you guys think about in soccer, the clock counting up and then the stoppage time?
That I like
you don't
it.
Know. You do?
Yeah, I like that too.
I like that.
They said bonus. Some people really like it, but some people think it's dumb. So there you go. That's your world of stupid.
Thank you very much, Jeremy Kahn. Matt Wyrich joined us at 7:30 to talk some Orioles baseball. But on the other side, Steelers reportedly exploring a trade for Trevor Lawrence. However, folks in Jacksonville dispute that. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. Good selection there, Joe. Very good selection. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. I am losing my voice. Please bear with me today. Please, this 3-day week.
Ain't nobody coming to hear you, Rob.
This 3-day weekend coming at a great time.
Yeah. Now, does it make it worse? Are you a yeller at practice?
I talk loudly.
Okay.
It's not so much yelling in the argumentative way. It's more of a, I don't believe in the whistle.
Yeah.
You won't come into my practice and hear a whistle. I'll stop. Hey, stop. Let me show you something.
Yeah.
And I'll reposition people to put them in a spot. That
you're not the guy that yells whistle instead of actually blowing a whistle.
Whistle! Whistle!
Coach, whistle! Where?
Whistle! But if the snow holds off, which maybe it will, it's like rain now, tomorrow, we'll play tomorrow. And that's when I yell the most.
Yeah, and I lose my voice a lot of times during games because it's so loud in the gym. And you're trying to project, and I can't project well.
See how loud our gym gets.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be tough in those situations, especially when it's packed, man.
No voice whatsoever. Yeah. None.
Whistle.
Hey, Deja, yell at them for me.
Whistle.
And it sounds like the Steelers may have an interest in Trevor Lawrence. Now, before we get to whether that's true or not, I don't like Trevor Lawrence. However, if Trevor Lawrence could ever be successful, I could see him going to Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers because they define success a little bit differently. They don't define success as putting up 4,300 yards passing and 30 touchdowns. They define success as managing the game and not getting in the way.
Yeah, they didn't ask Russell Wilson to do a lot, and they still made it to the playoffs.
Right.
You know, like, and I'm saying there are going to be situations and times where they need you to be a playmaker. You know, you got to drive down the field and win the game. Trevor Lawrence has done that plenty of times. I do think the shine is off of him where people now are not going to go, oh, yeah, he's one of the best prospects to ever come out of college. We're past that point.
Yeah, we are.
What have you done for me lately? But I agree with you. Like, I feel like of all the moves the Steelers could make, like they're talking about either bringing back one of the guys they had, which I don't think they're going to. Aaron Rodgers, no. This would be one of the best situations they could have, depending on who else is available, because I think Mike Tomlin could do a lot by simplifying the game for Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence's best year was 2022. He completed 66% of his passes for 4,100 yards, 25 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, and a passer rating of 95. That was his best year. If Trevor Lawrence could be that guy with the Pittsburgh Steelers, then we're in trouble in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Because that would complement that defense tremendously. And in today's NFL, he played all 17 games that year. In today's NFL of 17 games, 4,100 yards is the new 39. You know what I mean? It's like going under 4,000 in the 16-game season. So it's not tremendous. If he can be that guy for Pittsburgh, you know, averaging 241 passing yards per game, that's effective.
Yeah, no question. And again, like you're going there and you already have some weapons in place. You still got to get that cat Pickens in line. I think Pickens is talented, but I don't think he's as talented as he acts. You know, like if you're going to be a diva, you need to be better than that, man. You can't just disappear in an entire game. You can't talk all that mess and come away with a negative yard as your only play in the game. You know, like that's can't have it. So I do think the running game will be there and their offensive line was better this year.
Yeah.
You're going to have a good defense. Jacksonville's had some good defenses, but I don't think any of us have really believed in them. Like there have been times like, man, they're getting there. And I think next year could be their year. And it's always something. Oh, Urban Meyer's a scumbag. Didn't know that. Now we know it. Oh, wait a minute. Trevor Lawrence just not getting it done in crunch time. What's going on with that? Oh, you got him a bunch of wide receivers and he's still not putting up numbers. So maybe it does, you know, come to a situation where they trade for him and he falls on his face in Pittsburgh. But, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing that being in Baltimore.
What's the likelihood of him being traded from Jacksonville? They got a new coach in town. They probably just want to build around Trevor Lawrence.
Well, don't you want to get rid of that contract? Now, we said that was a bad contract after he got signed. I mean, it gets you out from under that, and you're probably – like, I think the rub here is that depending on the type of draft pick you get for him, probably is contingent upon how much of that money you're taking on. Like, if Jacksonville said, hey, we'll eat this much of his contract, maybe they get a higher draft pick for it.
It's a one and a two. That's what they want, one and a two.
Jeez.
Jacksonville is number five right now. Number five. Meaning they could get a quarterback.
Yeah, they could draft another guy and try it again if they want to go with Shador or somebody else. But drafting Shador, you don't know if he wants to go there. And Shador's already said he ain't going six. Like, everybody's like, oh, he said he saw himself mocked at six. It's like, hey, you don't get to decide which how these teams feel about you. There's a lot of people that think Cam Ward will be the first quarterback taken off the board.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know that any of these guys are ones that I want to invest a top 10 pick in, for me personally.
Is Cleveland going to draft a quarterback?
I would assume. I just don't know if Tennessee's going to. I just
really?
Don't. Yeah, because they've been talking about even trading that pick.
Who are they going with? They going
to go
with,
I think, Abdul Carter, the pass rusher out of Penn State.
No, who is going to be quarterback next year? Levis?
I mean, they still have Mr. Mayonnaise there.
He's horrible.
Or, I know, but like again, you get the number one overall pick, and the thought process is, hey, we got to get a quarterback. But are these the quarterbacks you want when you have the first pick? I don't know, because there are people that said if these two quarterbacks, talking about the top two here, if they were in last year's draft, they would have been 6 and 7 out of that group. And maybe that's the case, but we'll just have to wait and see. But the other thing is, I heard that the Giants were interested in Matt Stafford.
Yes.
And then the Rams won a first-round pick for him. It's like,
no, you're not getting that.
I ain't giving a first-round pick for Matt Stafford, knowing that he might play one more year. Like, you don't know how many more years he's going to play.
NFL draft is way too important for that.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
You know, it's not a long enough investment. And besides, if Matt Stafford was the difference of me winning it all or not, then I might give you that first round draft pick. Maybe worth it. But he's not. He's not. He's what does he make the Giants respectable?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You're not winning anything with him. Not because of him, just because you're not good. Barbershop topic of the day at 8 o'clock. It's a good one. It's a really good one. But on the other side, we're talking Orioles baseball with Matt Wyrick from Baltimore Sun. BaltimoreSun.com up next on The Fan. 7:31 in the AM. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. What do you have your arms lifted for, man?
Because I'm looking at the higher love.
Rob Long, Jeremy Kahn, Ed Norris on vacation. Joining us right now, courtesy of the Window Nation guest hotline from Baltimore Sun. BaltimoreSun.com. He is Matt Wyrick. What's going on, Matt?
Morning, fellas.
Morning.
Doing well, man. We know you're down in Sarasota living your best life. Tell us, man, what kind of shape are these guys showing up in spring training this year?
Yeah, I mean, everyone looks good. I know Adley Rutschman got a few comments from coaches on how he's looking. To me, the first person who jumped out was Jackson Holliday. He definitely looks like he's put on some more muscle this offseason. It was tough to tell at the Birdland Caravan because they're all wearing their jerseys and everything, but you can definitely see it in the locker room. He is looking like not as much like the thin little 20-year-old that he was last year, maybe more the part of a major leaguer. So interested to see how that translates.
Yeah, we were just talking about it earlier, and I think I brought it up with everyone we've talked Orioles with, that seems like there's a logjam of players and trying to figure out how you're going to get at bats for them, mainly in that DH spot, corner outfield, maybe first base. What are your thoughts on what they have there? Because one of the big questions is how much are we going to see Kjærstad? Because I want to see him more than the other guys.
Yeah, you know, I think Kjærstad is almost going to be kind of like a utility player. I mean, at least my read on it based on comments from Mike Elias so far. But it seems like they want to get him at bats, and they know that they have O'Neill in right field who has an injury history and maybe some platoon splits that they can maybe get some at bats there for him. They can give a guy like Couser or Mullins a day off and get Kjærstad in there. They can get him in at DH. And potentially with how much we see Ryan Mountcastle versus Ryan O'Hearn, you know, they could end up being just a strictly first base platoon or maybe just a slight share of DH, less so than last year, which could open up more at-bats there. So it's kind of going to be, you know, I feel like a rotational thing, something where you kind of have to get at-bats where you can get them, and he's probably still going to be a pinch hitter in some situations, but it certainly seems like there's more of an opportunity this year than there have been in years past.
Matt Wyrick, Baltimore Sun, joins us right now. Matt, Yennier Cano, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Cienel Perez, Gregory Soto on top of adding Felix Bautista back on the back end. How's this bullpen shaping up for 2025?
Honestly, I think it's a pretty solid group. You know, this is a bullpen that was top five in baseball just 2 years ago. And I think that having Felix Bautista in at closer obviously, when healthy and at his best, one of the best closers in the game. But he also just allows a lot of these guys to slide into roles that I think suit their individual skill sets a little bit better. They really are set up to have matchups very well this year. They brought in Andrew Kittredge, who I think is one of the premier setup men, also when healthy in baseball. If you look at his numbers from the last 4 years, they're very impressive. So I think they've got the crew to really match up well in the late innings. And really, you know, I think they have four or five, maybe even six setup men who are capable and could emerge as those guys in the back end. We're just going to kind of have to see, you know, you never know with bullpens, it's a bit fickle. But as we get into the season, who is looking right and who isn't, I feel like they have enough pieces to kind of cover their bases.
Hey, Matt, you brought up Adley and how he looks, and the coaches were obviously taking notice. Do you think he was playing with an injury last year? Do you think something was off? Because there's a lot of fans that have written him off, just like, hey, I don't want to sign this guy. He was terrible last year. I think he's more of the guy we saw in year one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly possible, and a lot of people have pointed to how his numbers started to dip down when he got hit in the pitch by hand. He only missed one game with that injury, but, you know, catchers are almost always banged up. I think that's important context to know. You know, these guys really go through a grueling 162 games with what the weight they put on their bodies, their knees, things like that. So you always kind of expect catchers to be dealing with something. So I think if I were to be projecting his 2025, I would certainly be more interested in looking at the larger sample size that we had of his first 2.5 seasons than just the last couple of months of last year.
Matt Wyrick joins us from Baltimore Sun, BaltimoreSun.com. Robinson Chirinos, last 2 years, James McCann, the Orioles have had tremendous leadership out of that backup catching role. How does Gary Sanchez fit that?
Yeah, you know, I think Sanchez offers a little bit more prolific of a bat, certainly in the power department, than James McCann did last year. And we saw McCann get a fair amount of starts against lefties, you know, playing that catcher spot. We saw him start in a playoff game. So certainly it was an important role for the Orioles and Brandon Hyde. And I can imagine that Gary Sanchez could maybe fit that role a little bit better. And, you know, they certainly aren't saying that Samuel Basayo will be up in the majors this year. But if he were to be, I think that it would actually make sense for them to have three catchers because of the type of hitter that Gary Sanchez can be. If he can put together that type of season, it's certainly something that could play. So I would imagine he is going to get a fair amount of bats again. You know, they love to get Adley Rutschman in the DH spot to get him off of his legs. So certainly he's going to play an important role for this team. And if he can unlock any of the offense that he's shown in years past once again, I think they had a really sneaky find at the catcher spot.
Yeah, I'm curious your thoughts. I mean, Basayo, Mayo, and of course Jackson Holliday. I mean, we've talked about these guys ad nauseum. But I understand why the team doesn't want to trade anyone. Do you, in watching them, do you see the reasons why they have those guys so highly touted and the reason why the Orioles do not want to move them?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, especially Kobe Mayo and his bat. I know that it didn't play at the major league level last year, but to see the type of production he had in AAA, I made the trip down to Norfolk and watched him. I mean, the power is insane. If he can put it together and reach base at a decent clip, I think he's got 30 to 40 home run potential, and that just doesn't grow on trees when it comes to prospects. Obviously, Holliday, one of the best prospects in the game in his own right, and somebody who I think adapted very well to second base. I have to think they feel very highly about their former number one pick. It's just going to be a question of when can they create these opportunities for these guys, as we've seen with Kerstad. You know, as good as some of these prospects might be, the path to the majors just isn't always there in this organization. And certainly for Kobe Mayo and Samuel Basayo, they are pretty well blocked at multiple fronts right now. So it's a little tough to see how exactly they're going to fit into this team's 2025 plans. But certainly with looming threats of injuries, there's probably going to be an opportunity down the line.
Matt Wyrick, Baltimore Sun, BaltimoreSun.com. Matt, are you tweeting while you're down in Sarasota?
I'm tweeting and I'm on Instagram. Give me a follow on both at by Matt Wyrick.
There you go. Thanks a lot, my friend.
Good stuff, man.
Appreciate you.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, Matt also had this fine, too, which I thought was interesting.
W-E-Y-R-I-C-H, just letting you guys know how to spell it. W-E-Y-R-I-C-H. What you had, Jeremy?
It's B-Y Matt Wyrick. So by Matt Wyrick, that's where you can follow him. No, he had this cool fine statistically, and you always look at some of these anomalies and the numbers going, I can't believe this guy's on this list. But it was He had a list of certain players that have only done this number. Like it was a XFIP of a certain number and a WHIP of a certain number. Right. I'm trying to find it now. I just lost it. But anyway, so on the list, it was like Tarik Skubal, Paul Skeens, all these names. And then all of a sudden you get to the bottom and Keegan Aiken's on that list.
Really?
Yeah, of guys that have had, fit in this mold. Where their WHIP is, where their FIP is, like all these things that apply.
Where's their Nene?
Yeah. What's that?
Yeah, well, where's the Nene?
It's not too good.
It's not too good.
But yeah, so I thought that was an interesting take by him, just looking at where he fits in with those guys. Another guy that was on that list, because a lot of them are starters, is Ryan Walker, who is the up-and-coming closer for the Giants. Mm-hmm. So maybe Keegan Aiken's turning a corner.
Maybe. I always thought he had good stuff.
Yeah.
Just, you know, not knowing what to do with it.
Yeah.
Orioles are one of those organizations, though. They have patience, and they figure things out with guys.
Plus, Trump won the presidency, so this guy's just going to... Remember that was a thing last year?
Yeah.
After, they were just looking at Trump, and then all of a sudden, how Keegan Aiken took off after, what was it, the assassination?
Yeah, that was the assassination attempt. I forgot about that.
That was a stupid thing.
That was during baseball season?
Yeah.
Man.
That was July.
Jeez.
Yep.
Mateo went down, so, you know, it was...
Oh, here it is. Here's the list of pitchers to post a sub-1 WHIP and a FIP below 3, minimum 75 innings pitched. And yeah, Tyler Glasnow, Paul Skeens, Tarik Skubal, Ryan Walker, Cade Smith, who is ninth in Cy Young voting as a bullpen piece, and Keegan Aiken.
Keegan Aiken. Barbershop topic of the day at 8 o'clock. But on the other side, the Padres will reportedly hold on to Dylan Cease and Michael King. Smart move, or do you think the Orioles could get a more fair package for either of them by the trade deadline? Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Sonny and Cher, it's Captain Tennille. I watched both shows growing up, couldn't remember which one it was. Sonny and Cher would be I Got You, Babe.
Yes.
There you go. I mix those two up sometime. Padres reportedly said they're going to hold on to Dylan Cease and Michael King, Jeremy. Is that a mistake for them?
I don't know. It all depends on what they're looking for. I don't know the direction this organization's taking now with some of the young players that they've had. Because remember, they were all in. They went out inside Xander Bogaerts. You got Machado. Mm-hmm. You got Fernando Tatis Jr., who can't stop getting suspended for stuff or getting hurt. And he's a generational talent. I mean, they have so much there. And then they went out and got all these frontline starting pitchers, including guys like Michael King's turned into a really good pitcher. And Dylan Cease is an upper echelon pitcher with an out pitch that's better than most guys in the league with his slider. So I would love to have Dylan Cease in Baltimore, but not for what they're asking for. So if their goal is to stay in this and try to go hunting with the Dodgers, because you're so far behind the eight ball now with everything they've acquired, it all depends on what the front office wants to do. Are they going to continue to spend money, or is this trying to get rid of some money off the books because they've spent too much last year?
So you are of the opinion that even in trade, you got to be careful who you trade.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Like with them, again, if you don't have no intention of signing Dylan Cease after this year, I'm trading him.
Oh, they had intentions of signing, Corbin Burns. He had no intention of staying.
Yeah. No, I'm saying, I'm talking about the Padres.
Okay.
If you have no intention of signing Dylan Cease, I don't know why you keep him for this year in hopes that you catch lightning in a bottle and you beat the Dodgers somehow.
So using Corbin Burns' analogy again, that's what the Brewers did.
Yeah.
We have no intention. We know we would like to, but we can't be in that market, so get something for him.
Like if we gave up, you know, two mid-level prospects or a major league player and a mid-level prospect to go get Dylan Cease, I think it's a fair trade. I'm not giving up Kobe Mayo, who's a top 10 prospect in all of baseball, and you look at the numbers and what he's done at AAA, to go get somebody like Dylan Cease for a year. Where, again, you could give him the qualifying offer, get the first round pick back and all that. But I don't know that the Orioles want to keep playing that game. Eventually, you want to find your guy and keep him here.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Because I think the Orioles know also they have a couple of guys in the rotation who could become that guy anyway.
Yeah.
Because I think they do. I think the combination of Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez is going to be absolutely sick as long as they're here in Baltimore.
Yeah,
absolutely sick.
I mean, staying healthy is going to be paramount for both of them, obviously, because they've had some injury history here already in their early career. But we've seen enough from, at least in my opinion, I've seen enough from Grayson to know that he's going to keep getting better. and Bradish has been dominant. You know, when he's been out there, he's been dominant. There's no other word to describe it. Like when Corbin Burns came here, they said if Burns and Bradish had been on the same team, that would be the best ERA duo of any team in baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, like they were that good the previous year. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind kicking the tires on Dylan Cease. Hell, I wouldn't even mind Michael King either. But he's primarily a five-inning pitcher. Mm-hmm. And maybe he builds that arm up and you start to see him go six or seven more. But I think he's good.
Jeremy, I'm of the opinion that they're all five-inning pitchers and the special ones go more.
Yeah. Well, that's honestly, why, like,
that's where I am with baseball now.
I tell people in the first month of baseball when you're betting is a great time to start taking underdogs because starting pitchers are what you're paying for anytime you're betting a game because you're expecting them to go deep. And a lot of these guys only go four innings, a couple innings when they're first starting out, maybe five. You have a handful of guys in this league. Max Scherzer was one of them. Burns would be another one that can go deep into games, and then the guys will go, this is par for the course for this guy. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times early in the season, they're still building up their arm strength.
410-583-1057, that's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show.
What are you smiling about, man? You know, Rob got this little
a text.
Crap-eating grin.
It's Adam Martian.
Mm-hmm.
Masson, he's my boss, one of them. And, like, we go way back to where, you know, he was the producer and
the lumberjack and the hats and
that. The conversations that we have towards one another is probably not what most people say to their bosses.
Yeah. Oh, I get that one.
You got what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, it would be like if you became program director here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like, we're going to have there's going to be a different relationship. Yeah.
I'm gonna respect what you had to say because we're friends. However, I'm still going to say you ain't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's how it should be. I was just enjoying Rob telling the stories about Robbie and the gifts that he gets and what he does at the games and how he's got everybody over at Mass and trained.
Like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't get anything if he doesn't get anything. That's just how it is, man.
One of my favorite stories was Rob talking about this shirt that he got, and then all of a sudden he sees Robbie wearing it, and he's like, well, wait a minute. That was my shirt. Nope. It's mine now.
He said, no, his excuse was, it was sitting there for a month.
Yeah, you weren't wearing it.
It was hanging up for a month. What?
So that means you get to take it.
Was it hanging up for a month? And you know what? I had to check my phone for when I got the text saying it, come pick these shirts up. And yes, it was 31 days.
He told no lies.
31 days. He said, yeah, no. It sat there for a month. That means the statute of limitation is up. It's mine. Jab, what's up, Jab?
Hey, boys, how are you?
Man, it's been a while. What's up, Jabby?
Must be baseball season.
Yes, sir. Jared, real quick on the dog, too. Glad to see the pup is good, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. He came home yesterday, and, God, we were laying with him all day long. It was so good to have him back home.
That's fantastic. Real quick on the pods. They're kind of in the same situation the Orioles were in a couple years ago when the brothers kind of got into it. They're having a situation. The owner died, and I think the new wife and the son are fighting over who's going to get control and the whole deal. So it's kind of in flux in regards to what they're going to do payroll-wise, if they're going to cut a bunch of people. They fill that place up all the time. I don't know if either one of you have been out there, but Petco is a fantastic ballpark.
I'm going out there this summer, Jap.
I'll send you some spots to go, Rob. I know what you like. So, but I definitely think that they could end up moving those guys. They can say they're sitting on those guys, but they've got to be probably the third best team in that division, maybe. I mean, because I think the D-backs are going to be better. And, you know, the Giants are always sneaky good, and the Dodgers are just insane. So I could see them wanting to move those guys. But I'm like you, Jeremy. I like King better because of where the ceiling is with him as opposed to Cease, who kind of reminds me of, I mean, it's kind of good, but Blake Snell in that he goes five innings and he throws so many pitches.
Jab, also King may be more signable if you trade for him.
Correct. And that's what I mean. I think his ceiling's higher because he was a reliever, turning into a starter, going longer now, and he's got some pretty good stuff too, man. And then in this ballpark, they're going to need some pitching in this ballpark for sure, but I wouldn't give up on either one of those guys. Those guys can be had. But you know Elias, he ain't going to give up anybody really, really good for that.
Yeah, no, he's not. Thanks people, a lot, Jab. Have a good one.
For people wondering about King, he had a 2.95 ERA, threw 173 innings. When you start looking at it, his whip was 1.192, so he can improve there. But the strikeouts, He had 201 strikeouts last year.
Yeah.
And he walked 63. It's a pretty good ratio for a guy that's, you know, kind of a reliever turned starter. But, you know, Jab knows his Padres.
San Diego in general.
Yeah. And again, like, I want to see Petco Park, but I think he's right. That's why I'm talking about the Padres catching lightning in a bottle, because that's an uphill climb. If you're in the division with the Dodgers, you have to make some serious business decisions when you're ready to compete with them.
There's no doubt about that. We're giving out shovels at 8:30. Jim Duquette joins us at 9, but on the other side. It's our barbershop topic of the day, a very interesting one. Which athletes, present or past, you feel like they just don't get enough love? We'll give them some love on this Valentine's Day. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan.